Yeah, what he said.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Greetings and welcome to another edition of Technology Bites, here or wherever you are. Hello.
Even if you're sitting on the side of some Irish road, cursing your luck in the rain. We don't wish anything bad
on
you.
Or in bed with gauze in your mouth.
More likely.
Or in bed with gauze in your mouth. Oh, yeah. Ouch.
Poor Barrett.
Wisdom. All right, well, yes, so we have the
who are we?
Guest crew in here. This is Technology Bites on 90.1 FM. I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Plicted.
I'm Dwight.
I'm Lee.
And he's...
Roofhouse.
We're in double missing geek formation tonight.
Although we kind of half, we got Jay Lee, we replaced with Lee.
Right. We have an outsourced geek.
That is correct. I will be filling in today, although I'm nowhere near as cool as Jay.
See, Barrett was a last minute dropout, so... We hadn't prepared for that.
So this is Lee Hutchison, who is the reviews editor. Is that what you are?
That is correct. I am the senior reviews editor.
Senior reviews
editor.
For Ars Technica, which is one of the biggest damn tech websites on the planet.
That's right.
And he lives in Houston, so we thought we'd bring him in here and let him sit in Jay's chair like a big boy.
Yes.
And
I had no choice. They tied me up and brought me in here.
And that was even before we found out that Barrett wasn't going to be here, that Barrett time was involved with him spending some quality time with a couple of Valiums and a big wad of gauze. He had his wisdom teeth out, and so...
He got two taken out, which is... One is bad enough. At least
what if it was the lowers or the uppers, did he say?
I don't know. He said he cracked one.
Well, the lower ones are...
So if he did that, I was going to say, I hope he wasn't dumb enough to get one off of each side, because then you're jacked. You know, if you do one side, at least you can kind of favor the other. But if you do both, then you're on the soup diet.
But if he got them cracked, if he had one crack, then they should have already been exposed, which means that it should be an extraction and not actually like cutting into anything.
Either way, it's bad. If it's a wisdom tooth, it's bad.
If you're over about 17 and you're getting a wisdom tooth out, it seems to be bad.
Yeah. He's actually in IRC, and he says one upper, one lower, same side.
See, they're smart. That's the geek way to do it. That way he can at least, you know, kind of drink stuff or have things on one side of his mouth.
He can still chew tobacco in the other side.
Chew tobacco.
Plus he can think about that whole cosplay Two-Face thing, you know, sit in the mirror and look at that line down the middle with the drooling, bleeding gum side and then the, like, normal side.
Oh, poor Barrett.
You know, I've got a bag of Soylent left, one bag left. I should send it over his way and then he could have some while he's convalescing.
Yes. Yes.
Is it color? Is it green?
It could be.
Either way, it's people.
If you want to speak with Barrett, he's in our IRC. Pete, what's the IRC info?
Well, actually, just sort of given the whole rundown of all the various numbers, etc., that go here. If you want to call, it's 713-526-5738. We'll take calls in a little while. Our website is www.geekradio.com. There's all kinds of stuff there. You can get podcasts from prior episodes, which I had the server that's on got full. I had one of my customers sells comics that are PDFs on their site, and they use WordPress, and they use this one that does a smart anti-theft thing, or anti, you know, putting it out on the net. It, when he sells one of these PDFs, it puts their name and email address on the PDF. So that means if it ever gets out into the world, it's pretty obvious whose it was. The problem is the system generates a file for everyone that's sold. And the way I found out is because the main hard drive on the server filled up, so the database stopped. And so I'm going through piece by piece, and all the sites, you know, I'm looking at the usual suspects, the sites that are big, you know, that are large and that generate a lot of content. They're all still the same size. You know, they're in the ranges I'm expecting. And so I'm going through one by one, you know, on the command line, looking them up, and I hit this guy's site, and he had 33 gigabytes of PDF files, which the drive had been filling up, and I hadn't been going in and maintaining it. But it had plenty of space before he came along and did that. But anyways, it was quite a nice experience. And so one of the things I did was clean up, which means I went in, and yes, I've archived them, but we had podcasts going all the way back to 2003, I think, were the oldest ones that I found in the disk space. I didn't delete any of them. I moved them. There was a backup drive that's not public, and I moved stuff off through like 2011. So I freed all this space, and then he cleared his stuff out, and so I went from this drive being, you know, 99% full to having like 80 gigs of space available on it. And you kind of, you know, if I'd done all that stuff before, then it never would have. I guess if I hadn't found out, it still would have taken me down at some point, but
eventually.
Anyways, yeah, so we had podcasts for, you know, so I started thinking about it. It's like, how worthwhile is a 2004 edition of Technology Bytes? It's not like a fine wine, you know, listening in and hearing about how
they're
XP is pretty
document.
Good.
That's right, it's
and
historical.
This Vista thing, it could be big.
I think 2004, that was, they were still talking about Longhorn in 2004.
I think so, yeah.
Will it ever come out? And they're all looking, we're all really looking forward to it. So anyways.
Will Apple ever release a phone? Maybe one day.
Yeah, what will the new iPods be like? All right, anyway, so I was in the middle of the information and then I digressed broadly, which Jay's not here. I get to do that. Anyways, you know, maybe it drives him nuts if he's listening to the beginning of the show. He's like, get on with it. Throbbing vein. He's motioning to Cynthia to hang up the podcast or hang up the stream. Anyway, so geekradio.com. You can listen to the podcasts. You can see our Twitter streams and follow us if you would like. Which I don't tweet that much. So when I get a new follower, it's because of somebody who heard me on here or saw me on the site.
What's your Twitter handle?
Geekmouth.
Geekmouth. You're Lee underscore R's,
correct.
Right?
Yeah, Lee underscore R's.
You're Afflicted, right? With a PH. Groovehouse is Groovehouse. Mm-hmm. I'm D. Silverman. We ought to give out our Twitter handles regularly.
At least they're all
kind of like they have
clean.
Them in the bylines and stuff on articles.
Yeah,
now,
right.
Noticed,
right. Right.
Mine's flicked in it, and it's spelled just like it sounds.
Oh, man.
Good luck.
And right, so, down to the capital K.
So you can see the Twitter stream. You can see the Twitter stream, or you can, or the Twitter geological formation in my case. And then there is, you can get on IRC from the website, which is what, where Groovehouse started us off on this long trip. If you know what IRC is and know how to do it, you can get your client and go to irc.cuckoo.com and it's #TechBytes. Or if that kind of stuff is scary to you, then you can go to the website and click a link, and as long as you have Java enabled, as long as you've opened yourself wide open to various Java hackery, you can. There is a client for that, and you can get on with no effort. It'll almost be like AOL.
You can get on with your life.
you have chat, and let's see.
We had a geek gathering last Friday.
Yes, we did.
Ah, that's true.
Mosquito
I wasn't there,
infested
so
geek
it?
Gathering.
Yes,
were you?
It was.
Did you get right? All these things on my arm. They ate my right arm. Pretty much all the meat and bones is gone. They left, the left arm was like fine, but when I got home, it was terrible.
Yeah, so. it was pretty mosquito-y, and there was no food truck. I was terribly disappointed, Dwight.
At least I'm sorry. Yeah,
the generator and exhaust from that thing could have kept the mosquitoes.
That's right. But you did get some yummy banh mi.
I did. I walked over to, I forget the name of the place, but
Le Gervais. Yeah.
I was going to say, if you got there early enough, you could go to Le Gervais. Their stuff's pretty
good.
The banh mi was
excellent. The minimum credit card charge was $5, so I had to also get some spring rolls. So, yeah. For me.
Of course, you know.
Yeah, I had to do it.
It's worth
it,
though.
If you go again, though, what is it, Cali? There's a street over and a little bit down.
Yeah.
Makes much better than... I like Le Gervais. They're good, mm-hmm. but the Cali ones are
They're incredibly surly. You go in there.
Oh, I love that, though. That's part of the
really
deal.
Really surly.
I was
no
banh mi
for
night.
You.
I was in there on a bad night. I think it's just that. I think that if that that's just that how that woman sounds, but that she's pretty nice.
No. I wanted a little cup of
peanut
sauce to take with me.
Did you not?
Peanut or fish?
You didn't step to the right immediately after you ordered.
No, I didn't.
This is important. Peanut or fish sauce?
No, it's the hoisin sauce.
Hoisin sauce.
Oh, okay.
So that's like ketchup.
Yeah,
that's
that
like if you ask for ketchup.
No,
that's
right.
Like that.
Yeah. Right.
Okay. Well, maybe you just looked at it wrong.
I don't know.
Because I used to go to them when they were still on on Milam. And the cool part was the place I worked. The reason we found out about it is because of Vietnamese guys told us about this place. You got to have these sandwiches. And you just kind of, and so it was the Vietnamese sandwich shop. And we'd go. And the fun part was after you got your food and you sat down or when you went back to the office is find out what all the little ladies behind the counter that were making the sandwiches, what they were saying about us while we walked by. Here's your sandwich, fatty, and stuff like that. Most of the time, a lot of the time, they were just talking amongst themselves. It had nothing to do with us, but sometimes it was, and it was kind of funny for the people who knew. All right, well, let's see. So the show's just all over the place, which is, frankly, part of its charm.
We could talk about Vietnamese cuisine all night. I'm totally down with that. We could talk about pho, where to get pho in Houston. We have this talk. I'm all about that.
The foodies might go crazy. Actually, or would it bother more, the foodies or Jay? We had a big. There was a back and forth for a little
there
while.
There was
the
a dust up, a little bit of a dust
yes,
up
with the foodies. So I was driving through Houston one night, listening to the radio, and I heard a show about nothing but pho.
Was it called What the Pho?
We should stop now.
Yeah, see that it's an ongoing joke because essentially when we've had where we've gone on these kind of digressions and then somebody will call and they're just driving through Houston and they're amazed that there's this show that's about this, very obscure narrow subject in this big city. It's so amazing, and then you have to tell them that no, this is a computer show and Usually we're just helping people fix their XP machines.
That's right. Every now and then we lose our minds.
So why don't we knock out... I've just got a short news, because obviously...
What could you possibly be wanting to talk about?
What even happened this week?
Then I figure we will segue into... No spoilers here. We will segue into the Apple phone thing, because I think that would be a great kickoff for the techie part of the show.
Should we give out the phone number, you think?
Sure. We did, but... Let's see Dwight do it without looking at the sheet.
I've already looked at it, so it's done. 713-526-5738 if you want to be on with us and the Technology Bites guys and Lee Hutchison from Ars Technica.
All right. Well, so hit the button and we'll light this sucker up.
Hit the button.
It's the Technology Bites Info Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
So yeah, blah blah blah. New phones from Apple. Let's skip to the next thing that happens after Apple stuff, which is rumors for the next thing. There's rumors that there's a new version of Apple TV's set top, which could ship as soon as October, according to well-known tech commentator MG Siegler. The claim is backed up by 9to5 Mac, which says that while it's not sure when the device will arrive, sources indicate the hardware is at least in development. I would put that under among the least anticipated rumors of new stuff from Apple on the whole list. Out of all their stuff, I mean, yeah, the Apple TV, that's interesting. Now, if it was a TV set, yeah, people would be nuts for it. If it was a watch, if it was a refresh on the MacBook Pro, but... No, Apple TV, that's what well-known tech commentator MG Siegler came up with. So it's a hardware refresh, notably separate from a firmware update expected to arrive next week. If you already have an Apple TV, the new code will reportedly give existing Apple TVs better AirPlay compatibility, letting them stream music and videos hosted in iCloud from users other than the set-top's main owner. So maybe that'd be useful for you. It may be intended to make the Apple TV more competitive with Google's Chromecast, so good on Google for that, which lets people push music and videos via any compatible device. If it does ship in October, the new Apple TV will likely be arriving alongside new iPods and iPads. That's the thing, everybody. If you had something solid on that, that's what they would like. It's unclear what Apple would add to the device, though. Some possibilities include an A6 chip, support for 4K video. I don't know if that's... I think that's kind of hip for the room for Apple TV.
That's a little early.
And HDMI 2.0, but none of the videos on the iTunes store or pretty much anywhere else except I think there's like an obscure Sony service that has like 12 movies or something that you can get. You know, 4K. But anyways, I just report it, and I will say that the vacuum after Apple's announcement on the phones thing in the tech news world was pretty pervasive. As I looked for things to talk about for the show tonight, it was kind of thin. And here's a rumor that's maybe a better or worse, depending on your point of view. And is this new? I mean, didn't we hear about this? What, the phones? That there seem to be... I need to document them, and then I can just spew out automated Apple rumors. Rumors claim the iWatch is facing serious production bottlenecks. Let's see. That's hit every device they've come out with since the first iPhone has always been, well, they're working on it, but will the supply chain be able to produce for it? But anyways, just to ride this sucker out to the end, allegedly facing major yield rate problems in its supply chain, according to Taiwanese industry sources. They suggest that the chain is currently only able to supply 30% to 40% of the order volumes Apple has been holding.
There's not enough sapphire!
Expectations are that the iWatch will ship in the second half of 2014... at a price, where would they, this is just purely made up. This is totally somebody got this ex-rectum. Anyway, expectations are that the iWatch will ship in the second half of 2014 at a price of about $149 to $229.
Well, I mean, if ex-rectum says it, it's obviously
DigiTimes
happening.
DigiTimes claims that the iWatch will be built using powder metallurgy technology with follow-up processing using CNC machines. But this guy this bum on the corner when I was walking into the studio said that they're going to use unobtainium, maybe. No, the yield rate problems may stem from Apple's insistence on making the iWatch thin and light. Well, how? Why would they do that? Which may impose intense demands.
I have to tell you right now that xrectum.com is available. Go!
Thanks for checking on that, Dwight. Thanks for taking the plunge so we didn't have to.
Yes. It could have been a dangerous plunge.
It could be the new Cringely.
Now, we could always talk about the items that were supposed to show up on the announcement, on Apple's announcement day, that didn't show up. The macOS 10.9 Mavericks didn't happen. We did not get a release date. We didn't get a release date for the new Mac Pros.
The Texas-built new Mac Pros.
That's right, the Darth Vader trash can Mac Pros. We did not get a release date for those. We didn't get Retina MacBook Pros. There was like this whole slew of things that we were prepped to be all ready to talk about, and they just didn't show up. And, I mean, if Apple holds true to form, then we'll hear more about it next month, hopefully.
Of course, I guess, you know, that may be wise on their part because they don't get the pop that they used to, which, frankly, I think that you could put the ghost of Steve Jobs up on the stage.
Kind of like the ghost of Tupac with the hologram thing, bring out the hologram Steve Jobs.
At this point in time, you could reanimate his corpse and put it up there on stage and have it be at his peak. And there's just not that much. And it's not revolutionary like when you walk out there with an iPad and everybody's been saying tablets don't work and you totally spin the world on its, you know, in a different direction, or with the iPhone or the you know, those things. I don't think the iWatch is going to do that to people. But anyways, a couple quick last things on the news part, and then we'll hit the Apple breakdown. This one's kind of interesting. You know, Intel wasn't really in on the mobile scene a couple years ago, and they've pushed into the Windows PC market with Clover Trail, not least by rendering Windows for ARM, a.k.a. Windows RT, largely redundant. Anyways, Clover Trail hasn't been great, so now there's a successor that's been announced called Bay Trail, which is based on the next-generation 22-nanometer Silvermont architecture. Intel released some more information on three families of Bay Trail chips, the most interesting of which is undoubtedly the Z3000 series for tablet form factors. And this is system on chips. The Z3000 processors are going to go to the public under the Atom brand and will go head-to-head with ARM in the mobile class, basically under 3 watts of power. They'll come in dual or quad-core varieties and are claimed to deliver up to twice the CPU and 3 times the GPU performance. The most powerful one, the quad-core Z3770, will deliver clock speeds up to 2.4 gigahertz and support screen resolutions up to 2560 by 1600. I am all for a performance battle in the chips that power tablets and portable devices, especially if they can. Oh, and what's more, all this horsepower comes without any negative impact on battery life, apparently, which remains at around 10 hours of active use for, this is the top of the line one. The Z3000 chips will appear in 7 to 11 inch devices that run Windows 8.1 or Android, and that will cost as little as a couple hundred bucks. They announced these details about it, but they're not saying exactly when the products with it in it will arrive. They did promise availability in time for the holidays, but now Intel merely says it will start, quote, offering its silicon to manufacturers like Dell, Lenovo, and Asus in the final quarter of this year. Curiously, Intel is promising 64-bit support for suitable versions of the Z3000 in early 2014, although this would be primarily intended for enterprise purposes. You know, given that the new iPhone, here's a spoiler for you, has a 64-bit processor. Lastly, there are also Bay Trail M and Bay Trail D processors on the near horizon, which are extensions of the Pentium and Celeron brands for low-cost notebooks and desktops, including fanless systems. So you can look up more stuff on that. I think the portable ones are kind of more interesting. And finally, on new stuff, Seagate on Monday announced it sold more than 1 million drives using a new recording technology that will offer consumers 5 terabyte hard drives next year and possibly 20 terabyte drives by 2020. The technology Seagate is touting shingled magnetic recording, SMR, is needed more than ever. Just as NAND flash is running up against a miniaturization wall where the circuitry has little room to continue to shrink in size, hard drives have the same kind of problem with density. The data tracks on a 1 terabyte hard drive platter cannot afford to shrink much more, according to Seagate. The theoretical limit of magnetic storage, called the super paramagnetic limit, wow, that doesn't, you know, that almost sounds made up, but it isn't.
Real stuff.
It's real. It's real. So you can say it, and then when somebody calls you out on it, you can look it up and prove it. Is about 1 TB per square inch of storage density. That's fast approaching. Increasing the density beyond that will lead to data corruption issues. Currently, Seagate's drives store data at up to 625 gigabits per square inch of storage with the density thing. So they're at like 62% of the limit, the theoretical limit. SMR is only one of several advancements pushing the limits on hard drive capacity. Heat-assisted magnetic recording, Hammer, hey, Hammer time, is expected to take disk drives to 5 terabits per inch. Per square inch. Western Digital is expected to release helium-filled disk drives later this year. They might, you know, at least you'll know if it breaks because your voice will get all... No, anyways, the helium provides less resistance than air and so will allow more platters to be stacked closer together. So I like to think of that as the, it's the Elon Musk solution where you have your disks in a, you put your disks in a helium-filled tube so there's less resistance. So Seagate would not disclose which of its drive models today use SMR. So in other words, they tried it out. So when so nobody goes, oh yeah, you got this new thing that'll put all this space on, you know, all this data on the disk, you know, but it's new and untried. No, it's tried, and you out there might be one of the people who's been validating it for them. On the plus side, it doesn't sound like there's been like large scale complaints about failures on large. Seagate disks, at least not any larger complaint levels than normal. So we'll keep an eye on that one, and certainly, obviously, we want to, you got to have enough room for all your stuff, and of course, it all has to be on one disk because we're all becoming the kinds of people who carry every piece of data that you own on every device that you own all the time, and whatever doesn't fit there, it goes in the cloud, and that's the news. So
thanks for that, Peter.
Just continuing though on the thing that the spoiler at the beginning, of course, unless you've been living under a very large rock, Apple had its big event yesterday and essentially announced, I guess, what the three big things would be: the iPhone 5C, the plastic backed, less expensive. I don't think the word cheap really. People, I think,
yes,
agree it doesn't apply.
Simply a less expensive.
Less expensive one. The
5S. Less expensive to make iPhone 5, basically, with one or two upgrades.
Right. The 5S, which has some advancements that we'll talk about in a minute. And then I guess the third thing would be the kind of the iTunes, their Pandora killer.
Yeah, the iTunes radio
are sort of their,
which they didn't actually talk about at all during the event.
They just sort of, I guess
they mentioned it at the beginning.
They did,
but they did not,
and then didn't present on it.
Right. So the thing about the 5C is that is essentially, not only is it you have a less expensive iPhone reintroduced, but they essentially are throwing out their previous business model of taking the actual old phone that they had sold previously, and that was their low
end mid-range. They sort of accelerated it, though, because what it is now the 4S with 8 gigs will be the free on a 2-year plan,
right,
phone.
Correct.
Where I think before it would have been that I guess the 4S would have done that anyway.
Right, and the 5 would have been.
And the 5 would have been the right. Middle.
And so now it's 5 with plastic. And there were stories when the 5 was introduced that Apple was having difficulty keeping the quality up on the 5 early on. That they were having issues with build quality. It was difficult for their minions in China to build, and it could be that this is a way kind of to help with that. Is that they can?
It's also a completely different antenna design now.
In the 5,
it is.
See,
in the 5C, because what they did was they had a metal substrate frame that they put the plastic onto. And so they don't have the antenna bands around the edges anymore. The plastic wraps around. And so the antennas are built into that metal substrate. That is the antennas. So it may have different antenna properties, you know, than the original five had.
I asked a question before we started the show about whether the 5S fixes the issue on Verizon where you can't talk and surf at the same time. You can do that on Android LTE phones, but you were never able to do it on the iPhone 5. And I asked on Twitter, and kind of the general consensus is that it is still an issue.
I didn't, when I was looking at it, I didn't have another antenna. Yeah, I didn't see any change in where the gaps were in the metal bands, and I don't, unless they added an internal antenna system, but I think most of on the 5, it was all external.
I don't think they made, other than the plastic casing, I don't think they've really made that much of a redesign with the 5C. Kind of the whole point was to allow them to take basically the innards of the 5, the existing 5, and reskin it a little bit and reprice it so that it's the mid-market price, and then have the premium 5S on top of that. I mean, the pundits were all saying that the 5C was going to be like a developing market kind of phone. It was going to be a low-cost phone intended to be sold into markets like China, where they could drop it for an extremely low price, still get margin and gain market share. And that's obviously
not at all what it
turned out to be. Not even close. In fact, right now it kind of looks like. You know, if you walk in and you're going to buy an iPhone and you don't particularly care what color it is, if the fact that they come in red and blue and stuff doesn't shock you and make you be like, I want that, the pricing difference between the 5C and the 5S is slim enough to where it's almost like the 5C is designed to drive customers to the 5S. It's like that. It's like the 89 octane gas in the middle. It's like, well, I don't want to get the 87 and I could get but the 93 is just only a little bit more. I might as well just get that anyway. The 5C almost seems like it's designed to drive customers into purchasing the 5S.
It's a loss leader.
Apple has sort of specialized in that, because I've bought Apple hardware for a long time, and the thing that constantly happened to me, even 20 years ago, is you'd look at some piece of Apple hardware. So let's take the phones now. I'm going to go get a free iPhone 4S, free, $0. Oh, wait, for $99, I can get one of these colorful ones with 16 gigs in it. Oh, but wait, for just another $100, now I can get
a top of the line.
A champagne one or whatever. And then, there's a 32 gig, and then, hey, that's 64 gig. I can carry all my... And it seems like if you look at Apple's stuff, I think that points towards perhaps that the people who think that are right, that it's tied to making that kind of helping people jump up into spending more than they maybe intended when they walked into the store, kind of a pricing psychology thing, which is kind of odd. Although the other thing I think, though, with not doing the two antennas is it seems like on their major hardware decisions for that kind of stuff, that they look more at the world than they do at Verizon, because it seems like more of the world looks like the AT&T setup.
Well, it's that, yeah, definitely. It's GSM.
And so they seem to have stayed, you know, I think they figured when they're going to invest that it's cheaper to stay good on the AT&T side than it is to do special.
It's kind of like
you get a better return making a quad or a hex band GSM.
Halfway through the year, they can, if they get their volumes down and the prices go down, then they may figure out how to add that second antenna, and then Verizon will have its.
Well, it's like when T-Mobile in the U.S. you know, had the 1700 band, and nobody else used that for anything, and so you couldn't get 3G, you know, on T-Mobile. They didn't sell the phone on T-Mobile, but it was GSM, so you could take an unlocked AT&T phone and put it on T-Mobile, but you couldn't get 3G because it didn't do the 1700 megahertz band. But they weren't going to do it because nobody else in the world really used it. It was unique to T-Mobile in the U.S.
So at least it seems to be getting more organized, where there's more consistency around the world, which is helping to get from ghetto phones, I guess I would call them, where you get this cool phone with great features and you can't use it anywhere but on their network.
Well, one of the most interesting things I think about this is that, you know, normally Apple does for the S series, it's not a redesign. They have a couple of features that they drop in there, and they bump the speed.
Just more of what you like.
But
about
the 64-bit processor introduction is really, really interesting, I think. And
it's a big change in the chip design.
It is, and there's some question over what exactly Apple means when they're calling this a 64.
Oh, really? I haven't seen that. Oh, yeah? What's the... what's the caveat?
My Atari Jaguar back in 1993 had 64-bit processing. I mean, okay, so the A7 chip is the new SoC that they're using in the iPhone 5S, right? It's an uprated...
Emphasis on system.
Yes. It's not just the CPU. That's their SoC. Although they are beginning to break out coprocessors away from the core. It's kind of funny because there's this huge push to simplify and make everything be on a single SoC, and now we're seeing kind of the reverse.
Right, like components Moto X does that.
The components are breaking out. The A7 has the...
M7.
Yeah, the M7, the one that does the motion processing or whatever. But Apple hasn't been very clear yet on exactly what 64-bit... Does this mean that the iPhone 5C has the ability to address... has more addressing space available? Does it have additional registers that it can touch? I mean, we don't know exactly what 64-bit means in this context, because it's a marketing term that can be very, very badly abused, especially since it's an easy thing to throw out. It's got 64 bits instead of 32. That's as many bits.
So what would be the limited... What's the limited scenario there? In other words, if it's not fully 64-bit, what exactly is 64-bit?
The other 32 bits are where they store the fingerprints.
right.
I don't have a good answer. I don't know, because we don't know what it means yet. So we'll see.
Although, you know, in the thing on the new processors, mobile processors from Intel, they're talking about having 64-bit next year. So maybe Apple's stolen a march on other people, but yeah, maybe again it's one of those
potentially. I mean,
marketing,
we'll be Ars Technica, and I'm sure every other website on the planet, as soon as we get our hands on them, we'll be diving into it to figure out exactly what it is what it's got in there and what it means.
Oh, we really meant 64-bit like processor
emulation. 64-bit
emulation. Right.
Anytime
you've got something in a device that you can trump up and talk about from a specs perspective, there's the potential to be misleading. Like the international version of the Samsung Galaxy S4 with its octo-core, 8-core CPU.
Right.
That I guess technically is an 8-core CPU, but it never can use all 8 cores because 4 of them operate in one power-saving regime and the other 4 operate in a different power-saving regime, and never the twain shall meet. I mean, it's Apple's not alone in doing that. Every company does that.
Well, I guess I could see where if it was to be some, you know, to give them an extra thing to talk about, because the list, the iPhone 5S is cool and is interesting hardware. It's just tough. There's not one of those, like, big, sexy, jumps out at you new things. Everything's better. I guess the fingerprint thing is kind of the biggest.
That's the thing nobody else has.
On, and they've done a lot of stuff on the camera.
Yeah.
But there's going to be a whole bunch of people who are going to glaze over. Oh, the camera's better, and it does better stuff, and it'll take better pictures, and they're going to not follow the specs.
Well, but it comes in gold now.
So, yeah, you know, that's... I honestly, like, if I were just looking at the phones, I would definitely pick, and I'm not a fan of neon colors, but I would definitely pick the 5C design over the 5S design. I don't think it's that attractive. The camphor edges, the metal color, especially like the gold and white, it just looks gaudy. Like, I can just see, Miley Cyrus getting one.
So that
she can like use her tongue to like
stop there
to unlock the phone.
That color, supposedly that color is really popular in Asian countries.
Yeah, it is. It isn't outside of the U.S. It's I don't know if it's because of status, but in the U.S. that looks like a very gaudy, like, you know, oh, it's a Gucci phone or whatever.
It's
like
tasteful. It's a little tasteful.
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
The only time it would look good. Is and one somebody from I think the Chronicle made a joke about they were seeing the colors over their black and white TV set of the 5Cs.
Yes.
and I made a joke about that. I was like, wow, the new 5Ss must look like the moon landing, because to me that's like that gold and white 5S. It looks like the lunar lander to me, like, and not in a good way though, but in a gaudy way, like a Gucci purse from the 80s kind of way.
It'll be interesting to see if the thing I would wonder is, are there just going to be a ton of 128 gig gold ones that you know Paris Hilton and Miley Cyrus and all the fashion types bought because everybody knows that's like crazy expensive and that's the cutting edge. Where, you know, to show myself to not be, hopefully not be that shallow, the Android thing, there's not like one where it's like, yeah, you got that's the like crazy expensive, you know. There was some of them that were big for a while, yeah, that were large, so people, oh look, my phone is so huge that it must be spectacular.
Galaxy Mega size of this table, I surfed in here on it.
Where this is my, this is my big fashion gulp Android,
you know. It's the Chanel, let's sell them a $9 shirt for $400 version of the iPhone.
So speaking of Android, Dwight, I notice you're not rocking your Moto X anymore.
No, I haven't left it at home.
Okay.
I still have.
Okay.
I left it at home. So I didn't think about bringing it. I should have. I'm so bad.
Darn it.
So, well, we do have a call. We had a call.
We had a call. They hung up.
Uh-oh. Oh, we apologize.
Call back.
Kind of, sort of.
We'll talk to you.
713-526.
It was about like a dead Lenovo laptop.
5738. No. Well, we'll talk about dead. It's probably running XP, right? 713-526-5738. Call back. Talk to us about your dead Lenovo.
Have you noticed that over the past few weeks? It seems to me the percentage of phone calls of computers that had a problem that were XP, that was the vast majority.
Like, well, they're getting older.
90% of the yeah, well, except I think I would put it down as hopefully it's a positive sign that more recent operating systems actually kind of keep working and...
Or planned obsolescence.
It's more people buying Macs.
No, because I remember there was plenty of overlap when XP and all of that came out. There was plenty of overlap of Windows 95 callers and 98 callers.
All they have to do is push one patch, planned obsolescence.
The nuclear patch?
Yeah.
Although I think I saw on XP that they're starting to be third-party
companies that said
stepping forward that said they'll support it.
Yeah.
That doesn't surprise me. I mean, especially in a lot of large enterprise IT shops still running.
I was going to say, there are some people that are gunning at large IT shops to say, basically like firewall vendors and stuff, they're saying, like, we will help you to isolate your XP machines onto specific VLANs, mm-hmm, and control, like, specifically what can go in and out to them so that you can keep running these products without worrying about them getting hacked. Just because they're open on your network or open to the world or whatever,
and they've got all the business critical stuff on it that they can't that they can't swap out, running ActiveX controls that require IE6 to use.
So what's going to be fascinating is in another 5 or 10 years, when all those people who stayed on XP, when the last, you know, two rusted pieces of hardware fall apart from each other, and they replace all those machines with their new phones.
Yeah.
You know, the free on the 2-year plan phones that like blow away in processor power, capacity, etc. I mean, your average Android phone or iPhone rivals the power and storage and RAM almost, yeah, of most of these XP machines that people are clinging on. I can see the frugal doctor from last week who's got a server running on. There's a server,
yes,
running on.
Yeah,
it's
the call.
2003. Okay, that I can see that. That makes sense to go until that kind of runs out entirely and then take the headache in one shot. But the staying with it under most other circumstances, I guess, color me skeptical. I don't see it. It's not that good.
The one I feel bad about,
suck it up and learn how to use Windows 8 is not, that is a first world problem.
Don't get Groovehouse started.
See, the ones I feel bad about are like people that they don't want to move on, but they've got a machine that's like 10 years old. And they say it takes like a minute and a half, 2 minutes to boot up. And then everything's pretty slow. And so they're annoyed at it. And they could spend like $150 and get a machine that's better than that.
Right.
You know?
I mean, the bargain bin machine at Walmart that's in a it's in a basket. They're just laptops thrown in a basket, and you could take one of those out.
It's like in the rack. There's like the big giant like beach balls in the rack, and then like right next to it, it's like the thing of laptops.
They're mixed in with $5 DVDs. Is better than the yeah, hardware on somebody's. Actually, I've got a good business model. I should get Microsoft to pay me to be a big XP consultant. And then the first thing you do when you go in, because the slow boot up time is a great one, is then you go in and you tell them, well, you've got too much RAM, and just take out most of the RAM. Because I supported a network. They'll tell you at first that it's faster. Mm-hmm. I worked at a company where I, by default, ended up being the person who was running all the different machines on the network. I was a developer, but I guess I...
You were the computer guy.
I was a sucker who knew how... I could actually make them work when most of the people couldn't. And this one guy kept complaining, and I blew him off. These were all Dell... the little Dell boxes that they still have that same form
factor.
They still have that form factor, but now they've got like dual cores where these were like old, these were like Pentium 4s and stuff.
The Optiplex or something?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this guy kept complaining, and I felt bad when I finally like went and sat down at his machine because I like opened up Internet Explorer or something. I opened up a browser because there was some driver or software update he was supposed to get. And it literally did take like 5 minutes. And so I cracked up his machine. He had 512 megs of RAM in there. And he'd been working there for like 6 months.
Well, back in the day, that was a lot of RAM.
And you kind of, how he didn't go insane using this thing. I mean, so I filed it away as a thing that one could do if if somebody crossed you and you were like, I got this big upgrade now. You got to be careful because this one chip replaces all four of those sticks.
So 713-526-5738.
We have a call. And it's apparently the Lenovo's grandfather called.
I wonder if this guy's running XP.
Let's find out. All right.
Because that would be impressive.
All right, Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who do we have?
All right, up first on the show, we are going to speak with Ron.
Hello, Ron. You're on the air.
Ron.
We got you.
Hello, Ron.
Hello. Hello there.
Hello.
What can
are
we
you
do
there?
For you tonight? We're here.
We're here. Turn off your radio if it's on.
It's off. I have a weird speakerphone. I don't even know how to use it. Anyway, so that shows you how old I am. But yes, I have an IBM XT.
Okay, wait. Before you go on, when you say IBM XT, do you mean like
the first PC that anyone ever had
with the big red switch on the side? And
it's got everything. Yeah.
All right. Okay.
And it's got a color screen and everything, RGB, whatever.
All right.
Wow. So you got the upgrade version.
But yeah, and I think it had 64 bits, but I'm not sure.
Just not at the same time.
I mean, most of my stuff had, like,
KB, I think,
540 or whatever. But anyway, I just question, is there any way to keep that sucker going? Because it has all the old antique games on it that my kids have grown up playing since I first had it, in 82 or whenever. And they still love it. Is there a way to keep it going, or is it just a... going to go the way of the tar pits.
What OS is it running? What OS is it running?
It's still running the same MS-DOS that it ever had.
Does it have a hard drive, or is it floppy disk only?
It uses both.
Okay, so it's got
a hard disk. And it's antique floppy. We're talking the...
5 1/4?
Yep.
Yeah.
But yeah, it has a hard drive, and it still... It boots up, it turns on, and it runs just fine.
So working on an IBM XT, working on something that old in computer terms, is a lot like wrenching on a
Model
classic,
A?
Classic, I was going to be a little more complimentary. I was going to say like a 1960s Porsche in your garage.
Okay.
The expertise required...
A Porsche?
Well, just, go with
well,
it.
Well, okay, if I had to replace the battery
simple,
in it, for
to
instance.
To do stuff is critical.
Yeah, there's to replace things in it, I mean, you're not just going to be able to call up, to call up Geek Squad and be like, hey, help me out with my IBM XT. You're getting into kind of specialized, old, almost computer archaeology kind of stuff. So, I mean, could you keep it running? Well, sure, if you want to invest the time. Is it going to be easy? Probably not once things start going wrong, no.
I know. I mean, I've had an AT and it died, but this XT, it just don't quit.
Wouldn't this be a candidate for virtualization?
See, that's why I was asking what That's why I was asking what OS it was running.
I'm embarrassed
you can
myself
virtualize.
With my age. I've had this since it was new. But I have a lot of other computers and throughout the history, and it is just my favorite thing.
That's going to be
just,
what, like 81, 82 maybe?
82.
Yeah.
So one of the things you could do, obviously you could find... You're not going to be able to walk into like Best Buy or Fry's and get parts for this if you have to replace parts.
No, that's an eBay hunt.
That's
kind of
an
thing.
eBay hunt. But there's an interesting store. There's a store in town called the Goodwill Computer Works.
Mm-hmm.
It's a store where whenever Goodwill gets any computer equipment in this area, it all goes there. And I like to go there maybe like once a year and just see what's there. And people drop off really old computers, and sometimes they're working. You can scavenge them for parts. So you might actually go out there and kind of hoard some parts if you can find some XT components.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Do a Google search for Goodwill Computer Works.
Yeah,
okay.
Another good option is what Flick had mentioned. You could consider, if you have a modern computer handy, you could consider building a virtual machine using, VMware Workstation or VirtualBox or another free virtualization application. You could build a virtual computer running that same version of DOS, and as long as you've got the disks for your little games and stuff and you've got a way to get them onto the virtual machine, you could put them all on the VM.
That would be interesting.
Yeah. Would
I have a USB...
Would they
three
be
and
slow,
a half
though?
Floppy, but
oh no, they'd be much faster.
That's what I'm saying. See,
you can configure the speed. You can configure the speed if it's in a virtual machine. To a certain amount.
You need that 8 megahertz because otherwise Centipede's over in like 3 seconds.
All right.
Yeah, because the game's over before you could even move. That's my point.
You had to turn the turbo
fun.
Button off.
You know, that's what I'm saying. These old games, they're made for the slow.
Yeah, because they actually wrote the games so that the games
right.
worked with the clock cycle. So yep. when they started making 12 megahertz and 20 megahertz
then you have the turbo
processors, you'd
the
have
turbo
to turn the
off.
Turbo button off to play the old games because otherwise they'd go too fast.
Ouch. Oh, man, you're taking me back.
Yeah, well, that's what I was asking. I just wondered if there was a way there's no way to network something that old to anything new, and even if you could, like you said, the virtual or whatever, there's no way to keep the same speed of the game.
It would be a challenge. Let's put it that way.
It's working now, so I would say you probably want to do preventive maintenance and make sure that you keep it really clean. I mean, there's not other
weak,
than the hard disk. There's not a lot of moving parts.
Hard drive. That hard drive is going to be the weak part.
So
right, and
find...
it's never given out. So you know, it must just be. It's just never going to quit.
And it's not even going to. It's not. That's not even going to be an IDE drive. That's going to be
a.
It's
going to be
I've never had a hard drive on any computer that lasted anywhere near these many years.
No, it's because if that thing's
years.
A tank, man. If you look inside of it, it was handcrafted.
I was
going to
say that's because there's like. Pieces of iron with wire cylinders hand wrapped inside there.
Yeah, I would say don't leave it plugged. When you're not running it, unplug it and, you know, keep it away from
lightning strikes.
Always. So, no, when it's not, when we're not using it, it's unplugged, it's turned off.
No, I think Dwight's idea is probably your best shot for the if you have to get into the realm of replacing pieces, that sounds like the thing to do.
I know. I still want to play my King's Quest and Dig Dug.
It's going to be like guys that take old arcade games or work on like old pinball machines, stuff like that. Like you have to scavenge for stuff. And
the sad part for those DOS games though is if you're doing old arcade stuff and you're like lazy and don't want to be committed like me, then you install MAME and go download the stuff,
the ROMs,
and it all works. Or you wait until somebody puts out the emulator on your phone, for $2.99, and then you play the game.
Right, we're talking. This is the antique stuff. All the games, most of them are old. This is when Billy Gates was young and before I helped Compaq become Compaq.
Right,
but anyway, thank you.
Well, thank you, Ron. Appreciate the call.
Bye.
So, see, we were complaining about XT computers. XP computers. And someone calls it with an XT
computer.
That's karma, baby.
See, but that's the thing is, at some point, they get so old that it's not bad. It's actually good.
It's vintage.
Right. Right.
It's kind of, the antique roadshow cycle, you know? Not. Imagine if everybody showed up with stuff that was only about 5 years old.
I've got a Sony. I'm going to bring my Sony Clio next month.
I remember my XT. That was probably the second computer my dad brought one home from work. It had a CGA screen. Wow. Didn't even have EGA. Oh, yeah. King's Quest, Space Quest.
Oh, yeah.
All that.
I remember seeing, the King's Quest screen in, like, magenta, cyan, and white,
yes,
and black.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Memories.
All right. Well, yeah, it seems like on some of this stuff, this is how you start becoming a hoarder, is to support your XT to keep it going. So then someday they'll find the guy, or else, so you're just wanting to preserve Wally's friend. So he's available when...
I actually do need a couple of adapter parts. I've got a Commodore Plus 4.
Wow.
And a TI-99-4A with the external 256K... 50-pound memory,
yes,
box. I've got those at home, but I don't have the power adapters, so I've never actually plugged them in.
Yeah. Jeez,
I even got some like game cartridges for them and stuff.
I moved offices. This is not nearly that old, but moved my office, and so then my son spotted my 1997 Wall Street PowerBook. And those are some pretty sweet. That was Apple when they they came back, because everybody's like, yeah, Apple doesn't know how to make a laptop, and because they pretty much, other than when Sony made one for them,
right,
kind of thing. And then it's cost like a car to buy one. Fortunately, I was getting a little bit of that .com tile money. And so I got one. So I was like, it was like $3,000 for, and that was the middle of the road one. This was the middle. It was the iPhone 5C of the laptops that they were doing. But I had it all together, and the power adapter and all that stuff. And so he's into all this kind of old stuff, and so he like took it off and plugged it in and put in the power thing and hit the button, and then boom, OS 9 goodness.
I was gonna
was
say, yeah,
all over the screen.
Boots up OS 9.
There were some glitches to the display, but surprisingly it like came up and worked. And I'd been keeping it because I was gonna like gut the hard drive out of it and then just put it on an adapter or put it in a box and see if I could pull anything off it. But apparently I could get it right off the laptop.
So the first IBM compatible, I'll use that phrase to really date myself, computer I had was a Tandy 1000 that it had the shape of the IBM system, but it was it wasn't the one that had the MS-DOS on a ROM.
Was it a one-piece molded?
No.
No, it was a little... But it had the three voice. It had the three...
Yes,
instead of just
yes.
the one beep, you could get the cool music in the games.
That's right. And it had slots, and the hard drive was in a slot. And I shipped it across the country, and the hard drive rattled in the slot, and I never got it to like connect up.
Aww.
So, but I had like tape on it, and it was great.
And you lost like 5 megabytes of things.
That's right.
All
that's
in right. one fell
swoop. It was a 5 megabyte card, a hard drive card. Anyway.
All right. Well, that ends the first hour. We even have a caller. Apparently,
yes.
Just went on hold. But
has
you'll
it
have
been
to
an
wait.
Hour already.
We need to go and bring you these very important messages. I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Dwight.
I'm Lee.
And he's...
Groovehouse.
And the number is 713-526-5738 if you want to be with us when we come back.
Join the Chow Center for Asian Studies as it welcomes musicians Peter Brotzman and Kiji Hano to the Houston for their North American duo debut. Their visit to Houston will conclude with the concert on Wednesday, October 9th at 8 at the Rice Media Center. Ticket information can be found at namelesssound.org. Again, that's namelesssound.org. This event is being co-sponsored by Nameless Sound, the Rice University Department of Visual and Dramatic Arts, and the Shepherd School of Music, KPFT Houston.
Don't think you can make a difference? Be part of a movement that can revolutionize the radio station you know and love. By joining KPFT's Sustainer program, you can support your station and help KPFT reduce its pledge drives. What's a sustainer? Rather than giving a yearly gift, sustainers give a monthly donation that continues as long as you want. Giving $20, $100, or $500 monthly helps change the way KPFT operates. From having to meet our operating expenses through days and days of on-air fundraising, to friends of the station boosting it off-air throughout the fiscal year. Contact our development director at 713-526-4000 to inquire about our sustainer program. Did you know sustainers can ultimately give a gift that is substantially larger than annual givers? That means less pledge drive, more efficiency, and greater stability for KPFT, regardless of the time of year. Again, just call our development director at 713-526-4000 to inquire about our sustainer program. Make a difference today. This is KPFT Houston.
And welcome back to the second hour of Technology Bites.
All right. Yes, you are back. And he already introed it, so I don't have to say anything about that. And, of course, with the absence of Barrett, Barrett is currently hallucinating a Barrett time. he's having all kinds of interesting gatherings and so on in his pain-shrouded mind. But... unfortunately, we have found no way to record and broadcast them for you. If we did, that could be a hit show. That could be a YouTube sensation. But we actually have a caller on hold, and you can get in line and talk to us at 713-526-5738. And I guess we'll go right to the phones and see what we got.
All right. Up next on the second half of the show, we're going to speak with Gary.
Hey, Gary, you're on the air.
Oh, hey, guys. Wow, that was quicker than I thought. Okay, I've got a question for you. It's just something I became curious about when I ran into a tech problem with... I'm a teacher, and we use a program called Gradebook, which is accessible through the Internet, through a little Java applet, I guess, or maybe bigger than an applet, some kind of a Java thing that downloads. If I get too detailed or too esoteric, just let me know, and I can cut to a quicker chase. But so what we do is we just log into the Internet. We go to a particular link. The web browser comes up and then kind of auto-launches this Java code. It downloads and then auto-launches, and then our gradebook comes up, and, of course, then we can access it on any computer. And it's great to have. But it went down on us, and I was looking at some errors, and they were talking about changing something to JNLP file, okay? And I was just trying to figure out, you know, what's going on with the JNLP file? Why would the gradebook not be working? It says, locate the JNLP file, go to Get Info on the File menu, open it, and then change all, continue to apply the change to all JNLP files, and close the info window. It didn't work for me, but it just got me really curious about what was going on, and I'm wondering if you had any guru insights into what's going on here.
I think the one of the problems Java has been, unfortunately, has been found to, it's, they've had some serious problems with there's been some big exploits that have gotten out in the world with Java.
But other than that, Java is incredibly good.
It's still very good. It's pretty well thought of, I guess, on the server side. But as far as on your computer, there's been problems with it. And in doing some looking, I didn't find the same one, but Lee found one that had where Gradebook won't launch.
Yeah, this looks like this is this Power Teacher grade book. I think this is the application you're talking about. Because as you were reading off the instructions on the JNLP file, I was hitting.
Yeah, I think the one key thing I might have left out, I guess the critical thing here was they were saying set the computer to open that JNLP files with the Java Web Start application,
right,
as if the computer had not been set correctly. It had been trying to open it with some other application. And I don't know, that sounded kind of dubious. Now, you know, so I don't know. Does that make sense that would be it? What else could be going on here?
You're on a PC, right?
Correct.
Okay, let's see. Because I did see one of the things that I'm seeing here said something about associating it with the, you know, basically they had the same, they were talking about the same thing as you, associating the JNLP file type with the Java Web Start program.
Yeah, see that?
Yeah, and I couldn't even do that. I tried to go through their steps, and I couldn't. It didn't offer me the option after I tried to go through their steps, and I couldn't think of anything else to do.
You might consider reinstalling your local copy of Java. You could hit up
just uninstall and completely reinstall it.
Don't uninstall it. Just reinstall over. Just make sure you reinstall with the same.
Well, I always
make sure you get the right version.
Yeah.
I was kind of being sarcastic earlier because the idea of Java is awesome, but the way it actually plays out a lot of times is very difficult and ugly. A lot.
Yeah, you just got to make sure if you're going to reinstall. It sounds like what you want to do probably is to start with is reinstall Java, but you do want to make sure that you reinstall the same version that you've got currently installed, because Java applications are usually written to work, I mean, for better or for worse, written to work specifically with one version of Java, and there are lots of different ones available.
Okay.
But just check and see. You should have somewhere in your add remove programs, you'll see Java runtime environment or something like that in there. Make note of the version, and then go hit up Google and see if you can find Sun or Oracle or whoever owns Java now. Find the installer for that one version, pull it down and run it and see what happens. If that doesn't work, then you need to maybe do a little more surgery, maybe uninstall it and reinstall it. I don't know. Kind of once you start getting into Java, has so many hooks into your system that troubleshooting Java applications can be a pain. Now, is this something where you've got like a, you said this was for your gradebook thing. Do you have like a campus tech or campus IT group you can talk to about this?
Yeah, I sent them the email on this and they're working on it. But I've got to check back and make sure. As of just a short while ago, there was no solution, but I'll have to check back and see. I'm sure they're trying to fix it. I don't know if they're working late hours tonight.
No, sure not. But what they're going to start with is to try to reinstall Java, and that's where I'd start.
Okay.
What do you
So I guess one thing, I don't want to keep too long, but why was I not able to even find the Java Web Start application to associate it with Java when the list came up? You got any thoughts on that one? It just didn't show up in the list.
Like I said, there's been some issues with Java, and there's been security patch stuff, and so it may be that you had that there was a patch put in that blocked whatever version you are.
There's also like one of the problems I have is there's so many different versions of wrappings of styles of Java, and all their versions are different. So they say, oh, you need Java 5.1.5, and then you go and look, and it's like, well, there's JRE 2.1.4 that has some version of Java that's 5.something in it, and then there's, I don't even remember all. There's JREs, there's Java, there's all these different things, and they all have Java in them.
JDKs.
And they're all different versions that have different versions of Java than the versions of the. Anyway, it's very complex.
I gotcha. Well, that's insightful just hearing that, because that helps me to understand a little more about Java and kind of its fickleness, which I really didn't know before, so.
Well, I mean, and application developers tend to use Java because it's a cross-platform programming language. You can write one program that, in theory, works on Macs.
That's the good idea, right?
Everything else, right? Mm-hmm. That's why it gets used. The problem is that the implementation usually is kind of a pain in the butt, at least on the user side, because you have to keep track of, you know, 15 different Java libraries and all these Java wrappers and Java. It's
kind of like saying, like, I have a Toyota Corolla.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's great. So now you say, I need a part for my Toyota Corolla. That's great. Well, but, you know, this part for a 1987 Corolla isn't going to fit in a 1991 Corolla, isn't going to fit in a 2004 Corolla. It kind of comes into that problem. So you have to know, like, what Corolla you need to get the right part for it to work.
And a guy like me would never have realized there was, like, so many, you know, different facets and versions and all that, and that could be what's causing the problems. I was always under the naive impression that there was, like, one most recent Java, it gets updated, and that's done. But what you guys are explaining there is really interesting. Cause
that would be cool if that's how it were.
Yeah.
Your secret weapon is your add remove programs list if you're on XP. If it's on Windows 7, then it's the... Oh, what is it on Windows 7? Anyway, the add remove programs list.
Gotcha.
Look in there
programs
and see.
Programs and features.
Programs and features on Windows 7. Check in there and see. You should see... probably several Java things in there. Just make note of the versions before you start poking. Write down what you got, and then just try to reinstall what's already there.
Will do. Done. And thank you so much, guys. You're incredible with what you do.
Woo. Good luck.
Thank you. Have fun.
All right. Appreciate it.
Yeah, speaking to the figuring out which version of Java, and it's complicated and all that. So in the results of doing some searches to try and find some stuff to maybe help, I ended up at java.com, which presumably
is
a good
resource.
On the sidebar underneath the help resources menu that's got a list of places, find expert help on Java installation and setup. Get help now. Push the red button. So I pushed it, and what it does is they charge you $25 to talk to a live person to help you fix your problem. Which means that it's not, you know, that the fact that they're doing that, I mean, they're not like shoving it in your face, but the fact that it's there means that there's a large number of people who would need it.
Well, it's up to the application developer. The application developer can develop their application with whatever version of Java they want.
And I've gotten very confused because I'll have some program that says, oh, I need Java version whatever. And then when I go, you know, and it's like, oh, but we don't need just Java. We need something else. And so you got to get the JDK.
Right.
You know, and then it's like, oh, so I know what Java version I need, but then I have to figure out what version of Java is in the JDK, and the JDK numbers don't match at all with version numbers.
No, of course, because that would be too easy.
And trying to find that information is difficult on their site, so.
Yeah. No thanks.
But we're easy to find at 713-526-5738. You can call in, as you've heard in the past two calls. You can call in about anything.
What's even more fun is when you've got two or three different Java programs that you need to use, and they all use different versions of Java.
Yes.
So then you're installing multiple versions of Java and trying to make sure they don't step on each other.
You get this a lot, in, especially if you're working IT and you've got like different sysadmin tools, because it seems like all these different tools to work on different systems. If you want to log into your Cisco switches, you need one version of Java. If you want to log into your EMC SAN gear, you need a totally separate version of Java, and sometimes they conflict. And yeah, it's fun stuff. No thanks. not on my home computer. No
so
thanks.
What kind of systems do you run? What's on your desktop?
I am a PC geek that in 2007 made the switch to Mac OS.
You're fitting right in with the
MacBook and Air on the table.
I'm sorry, I missed it. When was that?
That was in 2007, right around when Leopard dropped. I made the switch right when Leopard went GA.
That's about when I started.
Okay.
Yeah, and I mean, I grew up, I made a career out of supporting PCs. I worked desktop support. I worked sysadmin, all on the PC side.
Did you hate Mac and talk trash about Mac?
Oh, I so did. My God, yes.
I did too.
Yes. Growing up, fighting the good fight on local BBSs and on Usenet in the mid-90s, talking all the trash about Mac. It's a computer for babies. It's Fisher-Price. And you know, right around the time OS X made that switch to, you know, away from the traditional Mac core and into the, you know, the BSD roots that it has now, that was kind of what it took. That and the switch to Intel were enough to get me off of Windows at home. And I have a pretty agnostic house. We're Macs on the desktop. I've got a closet full of Linux servers, and I have to deal with Windows several times a day. So, I mean, I'm popping in and out of... It's all the same. It's all the operating systems all suck equally now.
Yeah, it seems to, at this point now, unless somebody's a vendor who's closely tied to a particular, you know, operating system, something that only runs, you know, like the Windows, you know, the guys who are SQL Server guys or some of that stuff, it seems to me that we've lost most of the, you know, most of the religious wars of the 90s that you could spin up by all you had to do is say one was better in tiny way than the other. And you could spark it up. It didn't really matter which, you know, one side or the other would come. Whichever one you were speaking well of, the other side would come trooping in with their battle flags and so on. Where nowadays, it's interesting that that's kind of disappeared.
It has, yeah.
I mean, there's a few. There's the diehards and cranks of either side. But it seems to me, I guess it's turned into, now that computers are actually consistent enough that they pretty much just work most of the time,
yeah.
That people are less religious about them.
See, that was... Yeah, I started off PC, hated Mac, talked trash about Mac.
That's right.
But when I went to college, I got Vax VMS, then I went into Unix, and I really loved Unix a whole lot. And but I was still a PC guy at home. And then what happened, actually, I was using PCs at work, and I took over, the role I took over was for CAD CAM stuff after a guy left, and he had been using a Mac, so I had to take his Mac, because all the CAD CAM stuff and all the models were all on that hardware. And at that point, I started realizing, like, you know, my computer just keeps working on the network, and everybody else is having all these problems all the time. Like, okay, maybe, you know, maybe it's not so bad. It's kind of nice. It figures, now when it doesn't figure it out right, you're pretty much toast. Like, just move on to something else. But most of the time it gets it right, and when it does, it's beautiful, and I don't have all these other problems all these PC guys are having. So that was my first taste of, and that was probably OS 8, you know. So it was still weird, but it worked. It was nice. But then I got into Unix a lot. I started running FreeBSD. So I had been running FreeBSD at home some, in addition to my Windows systems.
Brave man.
And so when Apple went, this was like FreeBSD 4
and 5. That's what I know. I was thinking about the times. I was like, you are a brave
like
soul,
I was,
sir.
I was like hand rolling, you know, my kernels right. And stuff. But when Apple said, we're going Unix underneath, we're taking like a couple of major FreeBSD guys, hiring them, rolling that out. So when 10 rolled out, I was like, okay, look, I've been working for a while. I've got a decent job. I'm making decent money. I can afford the Apple tax. It's nice hardware. I mean, you're paying more, but it is nice hardware. And yeah, I can open a terminal window anytime I want and run Unix commands. And I get a beautiful GUI interface that pretty much just works most of the time. Like, yeah, I can pay for that.
Yep. I started spending more and more time in Linux at work because I was doing SAN administration, and most of the SAN admin tools, especially on the EMC side, and the NAS admin stuff, it's all Linux-based. If you're going to go in there and do anything, you're logging into a bash prompt, and you're doing it that way. And I kind of started to get exposed to a little bit of shell scripting, like I need to run this command to show me the status of this thing, and I need to run it every 5 seconds. Oh, I can just do a while true and like make a loop, and oh wow, I can just do that right at the command line, and it was so attractive. I started to want that at home, but I wasn't brave enough to actually run Linux at home because I still wanted to be able to, you know, play games and stuff. And when, I mean, it just kind of all happened at the same time. Mac OS switched to Intel. They did boot camp.
That was the key for a lot of people.
Yeah, Intel key. And boot camp. And then right. I was like, oh, well, I can get a Mac and I can have that Linux style experience with the command line with a very nice GUI, and I can boot into Windows and still play all my games? Well, what's not to like?
Yeah, see, I was the Windows guy at the Chronicle. We had Bob Levitis was our Mac guy, and we actually would kind of debate each other sometimes, and I decided when Apple went to Intel processors, I thought, you know what? I'm going to get a Mac notebook. I didn't have a notebook of my own. I was always carrying, so I got one that's supposed to
be. Yeah.
And got really into OS X, and then when I went to get a new desktop machine, I decided, and I fell in love with the big 24-inch iMac, which is still my primary desktop machine. The thing is 6 years old, and it will be able to be upgraded to Mavericks. And I'm just really happy. I see no reason, you know, at the moment to replace it.
Yep.
And I don't think I could ever have said that about a six-year-old Windows machine.
Nope, my first Mac is still it's my wife's computer now. It's on her desk. It's one of her two iMacs that she's got. But it's other than putting an SSD into it, I put a Crucial M4 SSD into it. Other than that, it hasn't been touched.
Is it that 24?
Yeah, the first aluminum 24-inch. Right. It wasn't the first one they did after the white plastic
mm-hmm,
one.
Mm-hmm,
so right. The late 2007 with
right.
the Core 2 Duo in it.
See, I started Mac from real early on.
So
from
we were making fun of you yeah, back in the right. 80s and 90s.
And now
you have the last laugh.
Right? Right. Now, I mean, I was using OS 6. On the back,
you had a Newton.
System 6.
Newton, right? You had a Newton.
I had a Newton. I had a Newton 2000. That's part of why I knew the iPad was going to be had the real possibility.
So
to be
you really
something.
Are laughing at all. you really were right.
I still
all
have
along.
That Newton. Right? Well, no. I mean, Apple went. That was a long, strange trip. I was in desktop publishing, so it was the thing to use. The other thing that happened to me at college with the part of why I got into Macs. You know, I'd gone to the launch, you know, the 1983 January, you know, or 1984 won't be like 1984.
Oh, I went yes.
When they had, and so they had the little Mac original one. And
you were there?
I went to one of the computer stores that, you know, when they rolled them out on whatever the 20th or whatever day it was,
yeah.
I went there and they didn't send the floppies. That there was no hard drive in it. They didn't send both of the floppies or whatever one that had the demo.
Yeah, yeah.
And so while everybody was milling around, though, I went over and like got on the machine and was doing the Mac Paint thing and mm-hmm. playing around with it. But then when I went to college, I couldn't afford one. You know, there was no computers at our house at all. There weren't even PCs. But then when I went to college, the thing that was funny is
$24.95. How much
they had both kinds of computers in the computer lab
in the RCC,
except everybody went to the PCs, and so you could get on a Mac like that. So it's like I'm like, hey, screw this, I'm taking the one with no lines. So I got into that, and then ended up in desktop publishing, which meant I had to do it. You know, I was doing the Mac stuff a lot more.
But. Have you read any of Andy Hertzfeld's write ups of the history of Apple and his time spent developing the original Apple stuff?
No, I'm sure I've read parts in various like Mac if magazines. I even got the magazines back in the day,
et cetera.
Mac World.
If you go to www.folklore.org, folklore.org, there's a series of it's 119 or 120 short little vignettes by Andy Hertzfeld, who was one of the he was the ROM designer for a lot of the original Mac ROMs. He worked with Steve Jobs and Burl Smith and all the whole rest of the team, Bill Atkinson, all the original Mac luminaries. He was on their group and he did a lot of the ROM design. And on folklore.org, it's kind of his personal memoirs of the time he spent at Apple. There are some amazing stories on there. Even if you still hate Macs to this day, even if you're a very pro PC guy, the stories on this website, folklore.org, are totally awesome to read. It's a perspective on the development of the Mac and how Apple felt in 1983, 1984, and like that whole, I was really young then. I was like 5 or 6 years old in 1984, but the feel of like the computing landscape back then felt so open and amazing and unlimited. And it didn't, I mean, just reading back, it felt like, to me, it feels like nothing like it feels like today. The way technology it was back then and the promise of what stuff like the Macintosh was going to unleash. I don't know. I love reading the stories.
That culture was definitely dreamers. Like,
yes,
I mean, they definitely, they really believed they could change the world. Like, this device was, I mean, that it seemed to exist a lot back then in the culture in Silicon Valley and in those, but Apple really seemed to trap people like that
it.
And really like on fire about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And isn't it funny though, now you can kind of accuse most people under a certain age, it's what everybody worried about with Apple. What was the big diss on Apple? Well, you don't know what's going on behind it. If you don't have that GUI and that mouse, you're stuck. You can't make the machine do anything.
Yeah, I think I said that.
Or if there's a problem or whatever. Well, now you're kind of where there's a whole generation. Because I was thinking about it when you were talking about, you know, it's like the save icon. There's a bunch of kids who they don't know what that thing is that you're clicking on.
That weird symbol.
Although that said,
blue rectangle.
There is a movement afoot to make sure that kids early on are exposed in some form to programming. And programming is programming, right?
Oh, yeah.
So you, while they may be working in GUIs and so forth, you know, you're having more and more kids who are interested in getting down into the guts of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think necessarily that, you know, none of us know what a hand crank on a car is now, right? And good riddance.
Right.
So I'm not necessarily, I don't necessarily like say, oh, they should know, you know, they should have experienced that. No, they should get really good at what there is now and make it better.
The flip side of it, though, that interesting early days of geek radio, or of before it was even Radio X, of this show, you know, so I was the Mac guy coming in with Jay and to have the show in the early, early days.
I thought Jay was the Mac guy.
No, Jay was a PC guy until relatively, very recently, as far as the last 10% of the show kind of deal, just about, maybe a little bit. But no, so in the early shows, the thing was I was the Mac guy, and first off, there weren't like tons of people with Macs out there having problems, although we did get a fair, there were times where it was 50-50. I mean, there were usually more PC calls. But the thing that I was worried about is, okay, well, so I'm going to be in here in the studio and then just sitting here waiting for a Mac call can I participate? Because obviously I'm Mr. GUI. I didn't know any command line stuff.
Right.
You know.
Just sit there with your Fisher-Price computer.
Except then when calls came in, doing desktop publishing, when you were pushing the hardware, and so things would break, things wouldn't work, and you'd solve them. And I figured out, I knew that all computers worked the same, even these Macs with just the GUI, and there was no way to go to a command line. I knew enough intuitively by how they worked that I had a pretty good understanding of what you would do. Now, I couldn't say it as specifically as go to this control panel and click these three things or go to the command prompt and type this stuff in, but I could tell them what they needed to do because I knew it intuitively. I had learned it from the GUI part, but then I understood what it was doing underneath. And so maybe there may be a lot of people out there who don't realize what they know about it if it ever came down
to
it.
The beautiful part for me with like, the PC guys who would like get bent out of shape about the Macs and like, oh, you have that GUI, you know, da da da. Yeah, I'm a Unix guy. Like you got nothing.
It's like, sit back down.
You're still going through a GUI.
Well,
like, and you can't do the commands.
The religious wars only started after they got over the idea that no, you still before you could really say you were a PC guy, you had to know DOS.
Right.
You know, they finally like backed off and accepted the people who used Windows, then they had enough people to have the Mac PC religious wars.
Right. Then you get into the look and feel lawsuit. Then all that craziness started with the lawsuit between Microsoft and Apple on the look and feel of Mac OS versus Windows 95, I guess, is when the look and feel lawsuit happened.
So I know it doesn't seem like it, but, you know, on this show, we take computer calls from,
oh, yeah,
our listeners.
Oh, I want to do it.
Okay, give the number.
I want to give the number. So, yeah, if you guys want to call in, we're here. The number is 713-526-5738. That's 526-KPFT. Call in and talk to us.
We could go on like this all night.
We totally could.
We just might. But we'd like to hear from you, 713-526-5738.
Yeah, don't not call because we're just going along on something. We're fine with dropping it to help you with whatever your computer problem is.
What kind of computer you should buy. We can talk about that.
Or get our opinion or give your opinion on, I don't know, whatever other
thing. Or if you're thinking about getting a phablet.
I hate saying phablet.
Me too.
Writing phablets. Yes. Who first used that?
I don't know, but every time we write it.
It was come up with as a derogatory term. It is made to be intentionally awkward.
I think it should be tablone.
Tablone. I like that candy.
Me too.
Toblerone.
Toblerone.
Yeah, Tablone sounds too much like a phone that you pay $700 on room service to get one, and it's not big enough, and you're still kind of wanting more when it's done.
Phablet and Tableau. You guys are, that's like every time somebody types that into the RCMS, our copy editor like has one more aneurysm.
Absolutely. That is just that's just wrong.
It's wrong. Does the Chronicle let you print the word Phablet?
Well, you know, I'm just on the web. And so I can say Phablet all day long and no one cares. But I try not to. I will admit, I have said it because otherwise you have to say things like big ass phone.
Right.
And I guess that's probably a better description of it than
it is a useful portmanteau, but it is a difficult one to make yourself
I might actually just start using as just a matter of course big ass phone.
Big ass phone. BAP.
Isn't it interesting though? about a year ago, 18 months ago, most people were arguing, though, that you only really needed, you know, you, like, needed a 10-inch, like, iPad form factor or, you know, 4-inch phone, and that was good enough. You know,
I was one of them saying that, yeah.
And now, suddenly, look how many different sizes and how many variations there are just among, you know, any given manufacturer, let alone when you go across the whole
It took me until I held a Nexus 7 in my hand. Until I had a Nexus 7 in hand, I was still like, this 7-inch tablet is stupid. Oh, wait a minute. No, this is actually quite nice.
Now that one...
The first Nexus 7 or the new Nexus?
The new one.
Yeah, the new one is like, the more you use it, the more you go, ooh.
Yeah.
I have the new one. I kept, you know, and the thing is, right, here's where Apple blew, you know, Apple... They could still pull this out, but you know they may be blowing it. You know, I got the new Nexus 7 because that 7-inch Nexus 7 gives you kind of a taste of when the first time I had a Newton 2000, because they are about the same. Screen is bigger and the bezel is a lot smaller. You know, the Newton is, you know, an inch thick and has about a half inch, well, about an inch bezel on each end and then a half inch on the sides. It's got a frame on it, but it's about that size. So, I mean, that's how you'd hold it. And the Mini, you know, the iPad Mini came out and, you know, I held off and... Then they still didn't put out a Retina one, and then they still haven't put out a Retina one. And so I got the Nexus 7, and it's like, yeah, it's ideal. It's the right size. I replaced an iPad 2 with it, and I have not missed it. The only things there's just, I'm not anti the Nexus, but there are times where their touch sensor stuff is not as mature. It doesn't work as well.
Have you gotten the update for it yet?
Yeah, it's got all the current updates. It's just there's just sometimes where
there's an update
on the iPad, I never had a problem with, you know, hitting I very, very, you know, extremely rarely had a problem like where you go to close a browser window or you go to click something and you get the link next to it or you get the open a new tab instead of closing the one you wanted to. And it happens enough more frequently that I don't think it's not me just being, you know,
that's the, I mean, that is, I mean, to me, like, that's one of the big drivers of Apple, right, that separates them in a lot of ways from most other companies is the fit and finish and the design on their products. They seem to really spend a lot of time to get that right. I mean, it's not 100% all the time, but it's usually there, and that's something that a lot of other companies haven't done because they're going for, like, a lower common denominator, like a lower price point. And when they finally did start to try to compete at that level, all of a sudden their products were at the same prices. Whether you want to say that's because, well, we're making a Mac competitor so we can charge Mac prices, or whether they really just said, wow, we had to actually spend all this time and effort to make this fit and finish tight, so now our price point's gone up.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, because like there's a Lenovo Mac AirBook competitor that's $500, $600 more than the MacBook Air.
That's the one I want to hear. I'd like to hear that meeting. You know, well, generally we're not perceived to have the same quality, and we'll probably be looked at as about equal with this, but we're going to price it $500 more.
I think it's hard for them to build that. They're not going to sell as many notebooks as Apple will of that design, and so they ultimately have...
They have to recoup more in fewer product.
They have to recoup more, right. They don't have the quality.
They do. They may have certain margin targets they have to hit, and they don't have. I mean, for all of IBM, well, it's not IBM anymore. For all of Lenovo's,
all of the Chinese IBM.
For all of their reach, they still don't necessarily have the global supply chain management monster skills that Tim Cook has.
And they also don't. They also have to pay licensing fees to Microsoft.
Right. That is correct too. They have to build that into each of their products.
Right.
Well, and Apple has the ability. Although it's gone away, I was thinking about the iPhone announcement. The fingerprint recognition thing is interesting, and nobody else really has it. And so that could really open some things up. But it's not that's not like a blockbuster. That's not in the, like, oh my gosh, I got to have it. I got to see this and do it, like you had with a lot of their other devices. And so I was thinking about that, and it's like, well, they don't really have that opportunity that much anymore. Because when, like, the iPad, in the lead up to the iPad, Apple invested a ton of money in the storage and the chips and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah, they bought up kind of most ignored of the
I mean, there were little
solid
stories here and there about them buying up making these big investments in it, but nobody flashed to it. And now, of course, everybody knows that's how you watch where Apple's going, and everybody is following them closely, or actually going ahead of them. I mean, Samsung has been trying to jump ahead, which I think the funniest comment I saw, that their watch has been, was out last week, and people were talking fairly positively, and now it's kind of turned and people are using it, and there's a lot less nice things being said about it. I've seen, I don't know. I think it's still, I don't think it's a done, I don't think there's a consensus yet, but the funniest tweet I saw was, look what happens when Samsung doesn't have somebody to follow. Was their indictment of the Galaxy Gear. But nowadays they're all, the second enough displays come out to do the Retina, whatever tablet or the put on your laptop, all of the vendors are busy buying them and trying to cram them onto their devices. And so it makes it a lot, Apple, I think the day when they could kind of gather something like that up and spring it on the world sort of fully formed is, I think that's done. I think everybody else has learned what they did.
Well, and the secrecy, I mean, Apple also isn't as violent with their secrecy as they used to be, too. I remember back there was in one of the iMac revisions. This was when Mr. Jobs was still running things. There was an iMac revision where they were going to switch to using like a new ATI GPU and the new iMacs, and somebody, it may have been like ATI themselves, leaked it to the press or something, and Steve Jobs was like, screw ATI, y'all are out, we're not buying your chips, and it was like four iMac revisions until they ever did business with ATI ever again. And you just don't see that type of retaliatory crazy secrecy out of Apple anymore. They still don't drop what their
and
new
now
products
the bomber's going to be gone. There's just not anybody left to be that vindictive.
Yeah.
All right. Let's.
So we do have a call.
We have another caller.
We do.
So bring it on, Groovehouse.
You got it. Up next on the show, we're going to speak with Bob.
Hey, Bob. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, I got iPhone 4S.
Uh huh.
And I go to notes, and I put a note in there and a date. Sometimes it comes up all in red, and other times it's underlined. What am I doing wrong that the red's showing up?
Let's see.
That has to do with spelling.
Yeah, it's a spell.
Yeah,
it's
that
a
means
spell
that
checker.
It thinks that there might be a spelling error.
It doesn't have that in its dictionary.
Show a suggestion, or?
Or it may be, even if it's like thinks it should be uppercase, or I think it's spelling actually. Red underline is that it doesn't recognize that as a properly spelled word.
But it doesn't know what to. If it has a,
it doesn't have a
suggestion. It'll
it doesn't
show
have
that
a replacement suggestion.
Tag-looking version to replace it.
Okay, a lot of times it's Thursday, another place on the calendar, Thursday is THU, and I put that in notes, and it always underlines it.
Yeah, it's because it doesn't know, the spell checker in notes doesn't know that THU means Thursday.
It's Thursday.
Yes, sir.
Maybe if you added an R, maybe it knows that version of Thursday.
Or if you do a
I'm
period,
sure.
If you put a period at the end of it.
Period, THU period.
Maybe.
Could be.
Let me try.
Yeah, we've all got our phones out here. We're all trying.
Yeah, and all doing notes. If you do THUR, then it will auto-complete it to Thursday, to the full word.
Okay.
Yeah, I was going to say, it underlined THU, it underlined THU period, but it didn't underline THUR.
Yeah. It's not, you're not doing anything wrong. It's just that the spell checker
it's
trying to help you. The spell checker doesn't recognize it. It's not certainly not going to hurt anything. It's just a letting you know with that little red underline, letting you know that that word, it doesn't know what it is and it doesn't know how to spell it.
Yeah, okay. Then sometimes the whole thing comes up red. My whole entry comes up red.
Like with the underline or the word is red.
The whole words, not underline, the words are red.
Hmm.
See, I'm taking medicine, so I put the date. So I put 10:35 p.m. Tuesday.
That's because
9/11.
You can tap on. It recognizes that as a date. If you were to tap on that, it would open a calendar entry and offer to save a calendar entry for you with that. That's what that is.
Oh, okay.
It's
so
trying
it's
to be friendly.
Red, I can tap on it and go. It'll go to the calendar.
Yes, it would open that as a calendar entry.
Okay.
Or another thing you can try if you want to play with it that might.
This is just if you want to play with it for fun,
you know, if you've got Siri active, if you hold down the button and tell Siri to remind me to take med at 10:30 on Tuesday or whatever, and Siri should stick it in your calendar for you just from the speech.
Yeah, I don't fool with Siri.
when that whole thing turns red, exactly like just like Dwight said, it's trying to make a calendar entry.
So if you click on it, like on mine, if I click on it, it pops up. Brings a pop-up window that says create event, showing calendar, copy or cancel.
Right.
Yeah.
It also, if you put in a phone number, that will turn red, and if you tap it, it will let you call.
Oh, okay.
Yep. It's just trying to be helpful.
Yep. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. That's kind of awesome. That is the first, like, really phone support. That's doing support on the phone like we used to do on computers. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, somebody like helping people with their browser or helping them with Windows on that stuff. I find that kind of cool.
Have you tried turning your phone off and on again? Have you tried installing your phone
on
top of
I
itself?
You know what I found on the iPhone last night? You can create a custom vibration pattern.
Really?
For your phone, yes.
Where?
So you go into, and I created one that was really annoying, so I got rid of it. But
so
you
it's
go
me
into
and
notifications and messages
just a
and
second.
Text tone.
Notifications.
And then go all the way to the top after text tone, and you'll see a thing that says vibration. So you tap
where?
Vibration.
Notifications?
Yes, notifications.
Yeah.
And then find messages, iMessage. Find messages.
Where's that?
In the notification center.
We can tell you where it is if you call in.
Yeah, right, exactly.
I'm in messages notification center.
Scroll up.
Up.
What kind of phone is that?
4S.
Oh.
Maybe it can't do it.
Should be able to do it. Don't make me come in there.
Secret 5 feature only.
Yeah, it's notifications, messages, and then look for text tone, where the text tone is.
Alert style. Oh, text tone.
Yeah, text tone.
Okay.
And then scroll to the top of that, and you'll see a thing that says vibration.
Vibration.
Tap vibration, and then scroll down create new
custom.
Vibration.
Oh.
New.
I had never seen that
vibrations.
Before.
Dwight is singing.
Yes. And so then you can tap a pattern, and it will do it.
So here's an inside joke for you. Brian Wilson did a vibration tone to that, and it took him 4 different phones to actually make the vibration he wanted.
So what I did was, the thing that annoyed me was I did dun 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 from what's the Doors song?
I thought it was Touch Me.
Touch Me, right. The end of Touch Me. And boy, when that was going off, that was annoying. That's just because it goes on and on and on. And I went back and deleted it. But you could do stuff like that with. That's pretty cool. I didn't know that. I discovered that last night.
Great.
713-526-5738.
So now you know what to do after you've assigned all the various tones that it automatically makes to all the people in your regular contacts. And then you can move on to making irritating new ringtone, or not ringtones, vibration patterns.
Excellent.
For each of them. It does, actually, I do have, you know, I don't do it for, I can't do it for everybody because I couldn't remember all the different ones, but for calls that I get frequently, mm-hmm. obviously I picked like a custom vibration tone to it, right. and it does help because then you do know who's calling without.
Oh, see here, see if you can get mine. I did it, and now it's not there.
It worked in rehearsal.
What happened?
Well, while he's finding that,
I have to do it again. It killed it some reason.
So we do have a call.
We do.
Another one. And another phone question.
Oh my gosh! All right. Two in a row.
Who is it, Groovehouse?
All right. Up next on the show, we're going to speak with Anne.
Hey, Anne, you're on the air.
Hi. So I have a question in line with what you've been talking about.
Alrighty.
When I used to have, before I got my iPhone, I can't even remember what kind of phone I had, I could create an event on my calendar and then put like 18 different alerts on it to remind me because I'm a very forgetful person. But with the iPhone, I can only have two alerts and then I gotta create a whole new event, so it's very time consuming. Is there a way to add alerts or to copy an event on a calendar?
If you're syncing your calendars,
I'm not.
Okay. If you're syncing your calendars, I believe you can do it from the computer side and set as many reminders as you want, and the phone will pick it up. You're just doing it from the phone, again, we've all got our phones out now, and everybody is heads down here looking at this.
I'm trying to see.
I don't know. I
see they have alert
could...
and then second alert on here.
Right. It just has two alerts.
Yeah, you may be limited to just doing two, unless you can create them from the desktop side, if you're on a Mac, from iCal.
They're just trying to help you.
I know.
It's that you were talking about having these kind of operating system questions. So.
Oh yeah, no, that's,
no, definitely.
That's a good one. You could well. I wonder, can you put stuff on multiple calendars at the same time? So
you could, if you want to do that. That's a workaround you could maybe do.
Yeah, it doesn't matter what calendar it's on. I'm not that fancy in the way I use my calendar. So,
no, it looks like you are stuck to just using two, unless you've got. I mean, let me see. Maybe it'll work differently on a.
So I should get an iMac.
You should. If you'd like.
Or you need another phone for each pair of alerts you want on a... Because if you had four iPhones and you synced them with iCloud, then it still would all just be the same entry.
Yeah,
of course, they'd all go off at the exact same time.
If there was any lapse in time between one phone and the other.
No, it's looking like for calendar entries created on the iOS side, on an iPhone or... it looks like you're limited to only two reminders, two alerts.
Okay.
You may want to
do reminders. You can do as many reminders as you want, and they're not on the calendar, and they will generate an alarm.
Yeah, you still have to create each reminder. I mean, it was so easy. I don't remember what I had, but, you know, you created one calendar event, and under alerts, instead of having those two, you could have 18. Even on the reminder side, you got to... create each individual reminder, right?
If you look, let's see, you may want to look, I did a search on iPhone calendar app multiple alerts, so this isn't the built-in Apple one, but there are some that have multiple alerts for a single event, and they may have something that does more like what you want.
Like an app, like a third-party app for a calendar?
Yeah, there's,
Oh, that's a good
idea. Let's see.
Those apps, so helpful.
Indeed. Do a search for iPhone calendar app, multiple alerts, and there's a number of them. Or I think that's the best way. I would Google that and
okay.
One of the tricks, just while you're looking at it, is look at the dates on the articles, because sometimes they have like, oh, the five best ones, and then you look and it's from 2011, which is not going to be helpful for you, like with the more modern phone.
Yeah, there you go. All right.
Okay. All right. And you know, the other thing is, I've got a LifeProof case, and the sound thing has never been resolved, and I don't know what the best waterproof case is that's slim.
I know that OtterBox makes some really popular ones.
People yeah, they're really huge. Like okay. They're really. I'm like a design geek person, which is why I like Macs.
Well, there are some newer OtterBox. Have you looked at them lately?
I haven't. I didn't. I looked a little bit. It looks like there are some like Armor or something like that. There's one that begins with A. I think that's slimmer.
Yeah, they're making some that are a lot slimmer now, and so you might want to take a look at some of those.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Okay. Thanks very much. I appreciate your help.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
I'm a fan of the naked phone. Well, my phones have always been caseless.
I had a 3GS and I had a case on it.
Free and naked.
And then when I got the 4S and then I heard where it's like they intended it that you shouldn't need a case.
I
went caseless.
But. I like as close to caseless as you. This is the Belkin, the Griffin Reveal, which I actually had on an iPhone 4. The version is
it's kind of a phone banana hammock.
Yes. It has a clear plastic back, so you can see the glory on the back. It has, and this is, and I've dropped this a few times, and it bounces. I mean, it like boing, boing, boing. So it definitely is protective. But you've heard that it's a caseless design. They've come out with some pretty nasty cases for the 5C. I have to say, those things are ugly.
Well, did you get 4S? There was the thing where Steve Jobs was like, you know, we don't intend for you to, you know, cover it up. You shouldn't need to, especially what we're talking about for scratches and also for covering the screen. You know, having a screen protector.
But
that
it
said
breaks.
It's made for you to.
It breaks.
It's been okay for me.
I've had a 4S long enough on my 2-year contract.
Knock on table. Now, do you get Dwight? You're in the tech journalist field. Has your inbox exploded with press releases from iPhone case manufacturers in the past 24 hours or so?
Yes,
because I've gotten 100 or so.
They're like, all waiting.
As soon as the new iPhone was announced, all these PR agencies like opened the faucets, and it's just like
just make you sad though? You look at it and go, somebody like a whole group of people like spent a bunch of time working
this is
on
like
this thing, and
nine
it is
paragraphs about how awesome this phone case
but
is.
But you look at the case, and it's just. Ugly and clunky and too big, and it doesn't really protect the device, and you know any of the things that are important are not handled.
Well, a lot of them are just rehashed cases from last year from the iPhone 5. The 5S cases.
So they just had to change the
just had to change the date the at the top of the press release.
No, but they had to change the
the little flash
where the
flash
LED
hole?
Oh, the LED flash area probably.
Well, no, but it's about the same place.
Oh no, they didn't because that's a big hole on that
yes.
one.
Yes, yes, I have a big hole on my so
my wife is texting me throughout the entire show.
She
like,
is.
Yes, she's been like
getting live feedback.
Yes,
I'm
getting live feedback. She's talking about how she loves her phone.
You
case.
Know, there's a list of at least two things where live feedback is really kind of kills the mood, right? If it's done by text.
Here's my...
She actually said she was going to try to call in and troll me with a fake question. So far, she hasn't.
Here's my
custom
vibration. So see if you can figure out what it is.
All right, go. Okay.
I wish you could get like slower and faster vibrations because it would make a lot more sense. Hmm. But it's the beginning. It's the Imperial Death March.
Oh, okay. I get it.
But it'd be really nice if you could actually control the speed of the
length of each vibrator.
That's copyright infringement. You'd be putting in copyrighted songs and stuff in the vibration.
So,
no, it'd be a cover. It's a cover. It's okay.
It's a transformative.
So you need to create the custom vibration app that you can then design your own apps and has a whole symbolic language where you can, like, anyways. So this has become the iPhone show. Yeah, I'm waiting for the call. Yeah, I was driving through town, texted on my iPhone, and I heard your show. And I was just wondering if you could talk me through the steps.
Well, we've gone whole spectrum. We started off with the XT question, and then we went from there to phones. So we've run the gamut.
To go from the old to the new, we just need somebody to call in with their iPhone 5S problem using their 5S, which then first off we would find out how in the heck they got their hands on one already.
Yeah, I know, because you can't pre-order one. You can pre-order the 5Cs starting on...
Is it so that you're supposed to wait in line? Or?
Yes, they want you to go. They want their... The people quit going. The lines weren't as long. People weren't camping out for 4 days because you could order it online. And now...
Well, I think there's also a couple other things, I bet. Apple has a trade-in program. And...
Oh, the trade-in
They want you there.
You have to go there. And so now what happens when you go and you buy your new phone and you just saw, while you waited in line, all these beautiful new cases that are just laid out that they want to sell.
High-margin items. Add-on sales, baby.
Tim Cook has said that he wants more retail store sales.
Well, you know what they... Yes, and good for them, because the image of the Apple retail store is suffering of late. I mean, it's gone from being, you know, a shining, beautiful model of how to run a retail store into, you know, add-on sales pushing services, pushing terrible things. I mean, you've got the geniuses at this point at the Genius Bar are trying to upsell you on services, and that's just, it's just painful to go in there and deal with that. It didn't used to be that way. And Ron Johnson was there. That's his name, right? Ron or Rob Johnson, the fellow that started the the Apple Store.
Ron Johnson.
Ron Johnson. When Ron Johnson
went to Penny's,
was still
and they
there.
Booted him out.
Yeah, his idea for Penny's, unfortunately, which made total sense to me, didn't really seem
it
to resonate.
It did. If you're a guy, it was a great idea.
Yeah, made sense to me.
Right.
Everything. Well, the price is what the price is, and we don't need sales anymore because everything is set. Well, great. That's awesome.
But you know who doesn't shop it? JCPenney.
Well, me, unfortunately.
I do. I shop at JC. I am a JCPenney shopper. I'll go in there. I'll go, yeah, that's my shirt. That's my shirt. That's my shirt.
This is going to sound terrible, but God love my wife. Ever since I got married.
Does she dress you?
Yes. clothes appear in my house. I don't know where they come from. I don't have to care. It's amazing.
My fashion is all Costco, and it's like, the thing is, $10 polo with a pocket.
It's
hard to find shirts with pockets anymore. Yeah, yeah. And I carry Bluetooth, and so I hate digging it out of a pants pocket. Mm-hmm. And so when they had those, I like bought every color that I could stand off the, you know, basically I just, every time I went to the store, I'd go by and put one or two of those shirts in the basket.
But. So we're coming down to the wire here. Do we need to announce the number one more time and see if we can get somebody else in?
I think we're pretty close.
Or do we need to banter it
we're
out?
We're done
I
for.
Somehow we'll have to figure out something to talk about to fill the remaining space.
Stay on target.
The problem is when you get a call at the very end like this, and it's nobody's fault or flaw. But what'll happen is they'll have a real serious actual problem that there is no way in the world that you can even start to help them solve
right.
it in the time remaining.
F-disk format reinstall C.
Yeah, that's where Jay goes, email me at geekradio.
RM-FR.
F-disk format reinstall C.
A web server, a book on CSS.
Right, exactly.
Well, the worst ones are the ones where it's just out of reach. It's like, you know, they're going to have to go through about two more steps than you could take them to and they'd have it solved. But no. So,
this has been fun. You should. I could come and do another one of these if we just sit here and talk about phones and stuff all day. I'm down with that.
The first article written about the show said that it was like sitting around in a dorm room with a bunch of people talking about you know, with a bunch of geeks talking about tech, and we haven't really stuck with the tried and true formula from the beginning.
It's a good formula. Just need more beer in here.
That is fun. So we've ended a Jay Lee free with, but we have not been Lee free.
That's right.
Episode of the show. I will be back next week. I should be back in the studio as long as there's not some kind of massive issue getting from San Antonio to here.
And hopefully, Barrett. Barrett's mouth will be healed.
There you go. Because with all these calls, I'm getting really tired having to manage the phone.
He's going to have a real pretty mouth now.
I'm hoping he's all like swollen on one side. You know, it's pie time that Barrett stopped being the most handsome of us and gave the rest of us a chance.
And now he's a little swollen of us.
Besides Groovehouse, who just always has a beat on the whole youth and the dark, troubled soul.
Goodness.
Kind of. Anyways, I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Dwight.
I'm Lee.
And he's...
Groovehouse.
So stay tuned for whatever's coming up where you are. We've got Michio Kaku is just waiting. He's like pacing out in the lobby. He's had four Red Bulls. He is ready to go. And we'll see you next week.
Thanks, guys.
KPFT is supported in part by Baylor College of Medicine. Have you been diagnosed with irritable bowel syndrome? Baylor College of Medicine is seeking adults aged 18 to 60 years who have been diagnosed with IBS to participate in a free research study. If qualified, you could receive treatment and compensation. You must have mild to moderate IBS and be able to read and speak English. You could not have had any abdominal surgeries and could not be allergic to penicillin or erythromycin. Call 713-798-0381 for more information. That's 713-798-0381. You're tuned in to 90.1 KPFT Houston.
Who needs a car and a 747 when you can't buy a
Go green and get rid of your old gas guzzler. KPFT will take your car, running or not, and turn it into a different kind of green. Money for the radio station. It's easy. Call our toll-free number at 1-855-573-8227 and let us haul away your vehicle and give you a tax receipt for your donation. Call now or go to kpft.org and click on More Ways to Give. We are listener-sponsored, commercial-free, Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston.
There's no more left to buy and sell. There's no more oil left in the well. The gathering gas can't be trusted anywhere.
Any amount of cash.
You're listening to 90.1 FM, KPFT Houston. And now it's Explorations.